Good morning, everyone. Thank you for coming today to this review of our interim results for the 24 weeks ended the 27th of February. I'm going to go through the financial and business highlights first before handing over to John to take us through the income statement, the balance sheet, and the cash flow statement for this period before coming back and reviewing the businesses one at a time, after which we will have, I hope, some time for questions. You will have seen the financial results this morning. Group revenue is up 10% to £4.8 billion. Adjusted operating profit up 25% to £370 million. After our interest charge, adjusted profit before tax up 20% to £331 million. Earnings per share up then 21% to 30.5 pence. And the interim dividend, which John will spend a little bit more time on later in his section, up 10% to 7.6 pence per share. The net debt at the half year is a little lower than it was this time last year at £1.09 billion. That is after a year of very heavy capital expenditure, which we'll know about, and also the purchase of Azucarera, our new sugar company in Spain. Clearly these results are excellent, and I wanted to spend a little bit of time explaining to you what the drivers of them are. Really there are three buckets. The first bucket is where investments that we've made are now delivering returns. The expansion of the enzyme factory in Rajamäki in Finland, for instance, the completion of the Zambian sugar factory as a second example, and then of course the continued growth of Primark selling space. The second bucket though is that which is filled with the benefits of the restructuring work that we've been doing, particularly in the grocery businesses around the world over a 2 or 3 year period. I'll come back to those later on, but we are in these results seeing the benefits of a lot of hard work over a fair amount of time. And then the third bucket is what I've described as recovery. There are certain parts of our business which for a variety of reasons were making smaller amounts of money or indeed losses, and which this year have improved their situation quite substantially. The UK sugar business has rebounded as we hoped it would and said it would, from now that restructuring of the European sugar regime is complete. You'll remember that that prices for sugar in China last year were very, very low indeed. They went from very, very low to very, very high, and that business has benefited substantially through that turnaround. And then finally, this time last year, we were talking about losses we made on a contract for corn oil in the United States. Clearly, that hasn't repeated itself. And we see recovery in the UK, in the US grocery business as a consequence. This first half is also characterized by very strong cash flows into the business. I mentioned that net debt is where it was a year ago, and John will take you into some of the detail between that. And then finally, I wanted to reiterate the point that the pace of investment, particularly in fixed assets, both in Primark and also in the food businesses, is continuing and will continue into the future. With that, John, can I pass over to you?
Thanks, John. Okay, revenue increased by 10% to 4.8 billion. The underlying increase at constant currency was 5%. Adjusted operating profit was 25% ahead of last year at 370 million. And again, at constant currency, that was 20% ahead. So obviously still very strong growth, and that really reflected strong growth in the businesses across the group. I normally read out average exchange rates, and I'm going to spare you that this morning. I've actually put it in an appendix at the back of this statement, so it's there for you. But not surprisingly, obviously, it's we have benefited in here from the weakening of sterling against the major currency pairs that we're looking at. Unadjusted operating profit was up 29% to $336 million. The profit of $23 million on the sale or closure of businesses comprises two things. There's a gain in there of $33 million on the sale of the Polish sugar business, and there's a provision of $10 million for the cost of closing the abattoir in Queensland that we acquired with KR Castlemaine business in 2008. As a reminder for you, we provided $60 million in the first half last year, and most of that related to the cost of closing our commodity oil processing plants in the United States when we transferred the business into the Stratus joint venture. The net interest expense increased from $30 to $37 million, and that was mainly as a result of the US private placement, which, if you remember, was completed in March last year. The other financial expense was actually an expense this year of $2 million compared to an income of $8 million. I think that was probably expected by you all and is a consequence of the small deficit in the defined benefit pension schemes. Profit before tax increased by 80% to $320 million with the benefit of the replacement of last year's sizable loss on business disposals with this year's gain. On our adjusted basis, the increase was nevertheless very substantial, up 20% to $331 million. And the tax charge increased from 36 to 74. So just looking at the tax charge in a little bit more detail, as we normally do, the underlying tax rate for the full year last year was 25.3%, and that was broadly in line with the 25.1% that we applied in the first half. Our best estimate for this year's underlying rate is 26.6%, which is higher than last year, and that's because of the mix of profits around the group. A slightly higher proportion of our profit will be earned this year in countries with higher tax rates. This year's reported tax rate of 23.1% benefits from tax credit on the amortization of intangibles. There's a small tax credit arising on disposal of businesses and fixed assets, despite the overall profit on these items of $27 million. And that's because the gain on the sale of the Polish sugar business suffered no tax charge, as we benefited from the substantial shareholder exemption on that sale. The credit relates to tax relief for the costs of closing the Australian abattoir. Last year's reported rate benefited from tax credits on the loss of sale of businesses that were at a higher rate than the underlying tax rate. Earnings and dividends. Adjusted earnings per share were 21% ahead of last year at 30.5 pence. The increase in earnings per share unadjusted 80% up to 31.6%. We've increased the interim dividend by 10% to 7.6 pence a share. We aim to maintain a steady increase in the dividend each year, and this year's increase reflects our desire to take the opportunity to rebuild earnings cover, which has fallen a little in recent years. I do want to emphasise that this increase should not be seen as a predictor of our view of earnings growth for the full year. You won't be surprised to know that we believe that EPS growth for the full year will be somewhat ahead of this number. It's important to maintain as well the financial firepower of the group, as we see a number of opportunities for further substantial capital investment. Before leaving the income statement, I'd like to remind you, if you haven't already built it into your models, that this will be a 53-week year for the group. Turning to the balance sheet, net assets have increased by £747 million to £5.6 billion. £200 million of this arises on the translation into sterling of assets held in foreign currencies, and as a weakening of the pound, that was the benefit that came through. Again, the rates are included in an appendix for you. The increase in PP&E and other non-current assets of £726 million reflects the continued high level of capital investment net of depreciation. It's also business acquisitions, net of disposals, and there's also a translation gain in there of £125 million. I'm pleased with working capital. It's £170 million lower than the last half year. That partly reflects the effect of falling commodity prices, but it also is a consequence of the close attention being paid to working capital management in the business. George has just passed me some water, so hopefully I'll take the frog away. Thank you for that, George. As you'll see from the cash flow, the first half outflow on working capital was considerably less than last half year. Provisions are £66 million higher than at the same time last year. We acquired £72 million of provisions with Azucarera in the second half of last year, and we've also established a provision for deferred consideration on that acquisition. This year we've provided for the Twinings manufacturing reorganisation, but we've also used some of the provisions for deferred consideration and earn-out obligations on earlier acquisitions. Provisions actually at the last year, if you care to look, amounted to £421 million, so really somewhat ahead of the number here at the half year. £122 million of the reduction since the year end arose on the completion of the Polish sugar business, which took place in November. I'm pleased, like George, that net debt has fallen by £53 million to £1.09 billion. Over the year, it's benefited from strong cash flows from the business, £115 million contributed by minority shareholders to the Ilovo rights issue, and also the sale of the Polish sugar business, but clearly it's funded the very high level of investment in the group over the year and the acquisition of Azucarera. The net pension liability of £114 million is a little changed from the last year end, but it's £190 million better than this time last year. And that's obviously with the value of investments increasing at a faster rate than scheme liabilities, and the benefit of the first of the five £30 million annual deficit payments that we're making, and that was paid in the second half of last year. Coming on to cash flow. Remarkably, I think, free cash flow in the first half was positive at £24 million, and that compared with last year's outflow of £146 million. EBITDA, which is the addition of the first two numbers on this chart, was £520 million. And that's actually up 21% half year on half year. And again, I think that's a very good demonstration of the expanded cash generative ability of the group, and obviously something that we see that will be sustainable and will be able to take us forward. As already mentioned, the working capital outflow was again considerably lower at £115 million compared to £216 million last year. The substantial capital investment at Primark has continued, and this year's £87 million includes the purchase of a freehold warehouse at Naas in Ireland. Expenditure elsewhere in the group was also higher than last year, with a continuation of a number of major investment projects, which George will discuss later. The lower level of net interest paid is mostly a timing issue. The scheduled payment date for interest on the US private placement is in early March, whereas obviously the interest on bank debt that it replaced was paid during the half year last year. No new acquisitions were completed in the period, but payments of £69 million were made in respect of deferred consideration on acquisitions made in previous years. Investment in the Stratus and Vivergo joint ventures and the buyouts of minority interests. Coming on to the segmental analysis. Very pleasingly, revenues were ahead in all segments. The big increase in sales in the sugar segment is mainly as a result of including the sales of Azucarera. The sales of Poland have been removed, and they're in the businesses disposed line on this segmental analysis. The other major increase to obviously highlight is Primark, where sales were ahead by 19%. Profit was ahead everywhere except agriculture, and you'll recall that last half year we did say that that was an exceptionally strong result. And now George is actually going to, as he goes through the presentation, provide you with more detailed movement of particularly on margins and return on capital employed by business segment. However, I would like to highlight the big improvements in grocery, probably ahead of what you're expecting, and that's despite the inclusion of a £19 million charge for rationalisation for Twinings Tea being included in this year's number. Sugar achieved this profit increase without the benefit of a significant contribution from Azucarera, where the high cost inventory acquired with the business constrained profit and margin in the first half, but that will come through then in the second half. Ingredients, I think, are demonstrating good profit and margin improvement, and I think very, very pleasingly, Primark's margins recovered better than certainly we expected from the pressure seen in the first quarter, where sterling weakness impacted the cost of imports. And it's finished the first half with margins largely unchanged. Group margin improved from 7% to 7.7%. Group return on capital employed in our continuing businesses showed a healthy increase from 13.9% to 15.7%. This was obviously driven by the higher level of operating profit, driven by the recent capital investment, which is now beginning to deliver a return, but also by the continued focus by management on average working capital levels in the business. And finally, from me, by geography, and probably my voice has finally recovered as I get to the end of this part of the presentation, by geography, the recovery in the ACH and Chinese sugar businesses are evident in the margin in the Americas and Asia Pacific. The decline that you see in Europe and Africa reflects the weaker result at Illovo. Thank you.
Thank you, John. And starting then my second section on sugar, where we see the operating profit up by 39%. As John has said, that operating profit includes almost no contribution from Azucarera. It is a reflection of the recovery in profitability in the EU market, particularly the British market, and also substantial improvements in China. Zambia is beginning then to pay back two very large expansion, doubling up to 400,000 tonnes of capacity in Zambia. That factory is now working much better. The last thing to say in my headlines about sugar is Illovo had a difficult end to the season, and I'll come back to that in a moment. In the EU then, the markets are more stable. We're benefiting substantially from the strong level of the euro. You remember we sell our sugar in the UK in euros. But in the UK as well, we had an excellent operating campaign. We were benefited first by really good growing conditions, which resulted in high beet yields and a large sugar crop of 1.3 million tonnes. We processed that crop really for the first time through only four factories rather than the six we would have had a couple of years ago, and we required the excellent factory performances that we achieved in order to process all that crop. Energy prices were lower, that was a help. And then finally in the UK, we were allowed to sell more of our non-quota wheat, sugar, onto the world market than we'd anticipated being able to do or thought we were allowed to do, and that helped as well. Just one thing to mention about the excellent factory performance. It was a really good factory performance and agricultural performance in a year which started off great and then got really, really difficult with the cold weather, the snow cover, and the frost. I think in years gone by we would have suffered substantial losses to that beet crop, and we would have suffered in the factories as well, and the fact that we didn't to any great extent in either, I think, is testament to the operating capability improvements that have been made across the group over a number of years. In Spain then, Azucarera, this is a business, as we get to know it better, we get to like better. The synergy work, the teams from both companies are working together to pursue both best practice, particularly across the group, and that work is going well. John mentioned the high inventory cost that we had going into the first half, and also that inventory is now gone, so the profit return from that investment will start in the second half. We had to get back market share in Spain through restructuring. They lost a fair chunk of market share and volume as they decommissioned sugar beet capacity. That work has been done. The market share position now is much better. The sugar refinery, which we, when we bought the company, was half built, is now complete and commissioned and working well. The last thing to say about the Azucarera year was that this was the wettest year in Spain for decades. There have been two effects from that. In the north, the factories operated the second half of their campaign intermittently only, as farmers struggled to get beet out of sodden fields. And then in the south, we've had a substantial amount of sugar beet underwater for a period of time, and I think we'll have lost some of that sugar beet. That will have a some effect on next year's sugar production in Spain. Illovo is having a tougher time than it's had for a little while, and will endure a short-term profit decline. Two reasons for that. Firstly, weather again was difficult in South Africa, in Zambia and in Tanzania. This foreshortened the processing campaign and they ended up with a little less sugar, 1.7 million tonnes, than they would have budgeted. The second reason for weaknesses in rand profitability has been the strengthening of the rand against regional currencies in which they sell a great deal of their sugar. So sugar sold in Malawi, sugar sold in Zambia, etc. The rand profitability of those sales has been reduced. The longer term developments of this business are continuing, and there's as much to be excited about the potential of that business, of this business, as there ever has been. Zambia, I've mentioned, the Mozambique factory expansion, the doubling of the capacity there, that's complete, and the Swaziland expansion, which will double capacity in Swaziland and also get us into the business of generating electricity, that is well underway too. Finally, and it's an important point, the South African operations of Illovo have been streamlined. We've shut two factories, we've put another one into a joint venture. South African sugar production is not going up and won't in the foreseeable future, and we're investing to get factory efficiencies out of a smaller factory base. China then, considerable operating improvement in profitability.
In the south of, sugar, of China, where we process sugar from cane, that business, which has always been profitable even last year, saw good profit improvement, firstly through, as a result of good factory operations, the campaign went very well, and secondly because of the increase in prices. In the north, where we're processing sugar from beet and where there's so much potential for us to expand our business in the years to come, the factory operations again were much, much better than they were in the prior year. We've now had these factories under our control for long enough to be in full control of the factory performance, and the factory performance has gone up as a consequence. The task in the north is to improve the knowledge and the extent of the growing of beet. We've mentioned this in the past, and we've got good local government support now, which is encouraging us for certainly for next year, and we're involved in extensive farmer training. 70,000 farmers in the area have gone through training programs to educate them about better ways of growing sugar beet. The north, of course, has also benefited from the sugar price increase, but there's a lot else that's gone on there as well through the year. If I move then on to agriculture, and just point out up front, as John has, that the exceptional profit that Frontier made over the last 2 years in this period of agricultural commodity volatility, that is behind us. It's still a very fine business, but the super profits that it's made over the last 2 years haven't been repeated. And that is what's behind the reduction in the return on capital employed from 25%, which is an astonishing level for an agricultural business, down to 14.3%, which we still think is good. Through the rest of the business, there's a lot of strength. The UK pig and poultry sectors are benefiting from a weaker pound and investments that they've made themselves in capacity and efficiency. And as major suppliers to those sectors, we've seen good volumes as well through our feed mills. We have two specialty businesses within the agricultural business, one that makes micro-ingredients and also pig starter feed, and then the second business which specialises in feed enzymes which promote growth for animals. Both those businesses have seen very strong growth through the year, and that's encouraging. In China, the business continues to develop. We had lower feed margins in the poultry sector of this business in the north of China. It's not a very big number. On to the grocery part of Associated British Foods. Just to point out what you've probably already realized, that for all the rebound in sugar and for all the continued fireworks from Primark, in the first half, the grocery businesses have been the source of the greatest profit improvement for ABF. That's come from really three areas: restructuring, which I flagged at the beginning, the division of ACH in the old ACH business in the States into a pure FMCG business based in Chicago, and then a commodity business joint ventured with ADM. That is complete. The two factories at Champaign and Jacksonville are shut, and the new ACH is developing its credentials as an FMCG business, and that focus should bring benefit in the future. Silver Spoon rebuilt its supply chain over the last 18 months, and that work is complete. We took an exceptional charge for the closure of assets there, and that hasn't repeated this year, and the margin improvement also as a consequence of the supply chain efficiency work that has come through this year. Jordan's Ryvita was last year going through the extensive merger. That has been complete, and the synergy savings from that work are in these numbers. AB World Foods went through that same process when we integrated Patax the year before. It has bedded down in these last 6 months. We've had a very successful campaign around the Patax brand. We've seen good volume growth, good margin growth, and that's been a real pleasure to see. The recovery piece then is in two parts, both of which I think I've flagged. The US vegetable oil is simply the non-repeating of the hedge last a year ago. And then I wanted to pay tribute also to the UK bread business, where the recovery has been a longer process than simply a single year. But it's a very different business now to the one that we all knew 2 or 3 years ago. A third source of growth, Twinings Ovaltine, the underlying profit growth has been very strong in the first half of the year, and there's good momentum going into the second half. That's both volume and also margin growth in that business. We've taken the £19 million charge for the restructuring of that supply chain in these numbers as well. Dropping down into UK grocery, I've said a lot of this already. The Allied Bakeries profits ahead, excellent operating performance, really is extremely strong at the moment, and Kingsmill volume and share have both grown half on half. Silver Spoon packaging rationalisation benefit is with us. Patax is growing strongly. Westmill, where we supply the particularly Chinese and Indian restaurant sector, we've increased profits, we've increased market share in a very difficult environment. There is some sign just recently that people are beginning to return to Indian and Chinese restaurants, but it's early days yet. And as I said to you, Jordan's Ryvita, the business integration is now complete and the benefits are with us. ACH, similarly, I've mentioned commodity product transfers have been made. The FMCG business is created. No hedge loss this year. And in just about all the categories in which we're operating, Mazola has seen share growth. Corn oil as a subsection of edible oil has grown, and the entire edible oils category has grown too, so that's a good story. In Australia, the bread business improved well. Operational work, particularly in New South Wales bakery network, that is complete and the profitability is coming through. It's been a successful, good product launch of Abbott's into the whole meal and value-added sector. That's gone well. And then finally, just to remind you that the building of the Castlemaine meat factory, which will allow us to shut or complete the restructuring of the supply chain in our cooked meats business in Australia, that's probably got another 6 months to run. We will start to ramp up production in that facility probably from June, July onwards. It'll take a while to complete. On then to ingredients, which is a business in two parts, as you know. Firstly, the yeast and bakery ingredients business in Māori, and then secondly, the specialty ingredients in ABFI, particularly yeast extracts and enzymes. Revenues are ahead, operating profits are well ahead, and improvements in both margin and the return on capital employed, as you see here. Māori is a truly global business. It's seen particularly strong growth in both yeast and bakery ingredients in South America. The technical and traditional bakery ingredients performance actually around the world has been very strong. And I think we can declare the integration of the old DSM yeast business in Europe to be complete and to be a success. In ABFI, we're benefiting in the enzymes business from having capacity now as a consequence of that expansion in Rajamäki. And when sometime this summer the yeast extract factory in Harbin is completed and commissioned, we will also see benefit from the latent demand that we've got in yeast extracts as well. Just as I'm not sure it is light relief or not, but just show you that sometimes around the world we have to do more than simply manage P&Ls. This was the consequence of our distribution and bakery ingredients packing facility in Santiago of the earthquake recently. The only good thing that can be said is it happened at 1 o'clock in the morning and there was no one in it. I think there's probably about $3 million worth of damage in that photo. On then to Primark, where I'd characterise this 6 months as being more of the same, really. We've opened Profits are up 19%. I've missed a page. The margin is better than we'd anticipated going into this year, and the return on capital employed is well up too. Like-for-like sales across Primark up 8%, exceptional growth from the Spanish stores, which I'll show you in more detail a little later on. And then really benefiting profit-wise from the operational gearing that's in any retail business, and heavy investment in new stores, both in the UK but also across Europe. We've opened 5 stores in the first half. Our first store in Belgium, in Liège, which is trading well. We expect to open another 6 stores in the second half, 3 of which will be in the UK and 3 in Spain. And you'll have noted in the period that we substantially added to the UK pipeline of new stores with the purchase of 10 stores from BHS. Those stores will begin to open towards the end of this year and through 2011. John also flagged two new investments in warehouse, firstly in Nace, which will allow us to consolidate the Irish distribution depot, and then an important facility in Spain, just northeast of Madrid, which will allow us to take a great number of trucks off the road. At the moment, we supply all our Spanish stores out of the Irish depot. In giving capacity back to Ireland, we will both make the supply of the Irish stores easier, and also give ourselves capacity to supply an expanding network of stores across Northern Europe, which are also being supplied currently out of Ireland. This is just a table of growth expansion of new store growth, 9% addition to footage in the period. Spain leading that with 14%, the UK at 5%, and Ireland with 1%. In trading then, UK trading it has been very strong. We had a very good Christmas. Spring has been excellent, and I think we take a good momentum into the second half. I can say a little bit more about Iberia, where we've seen really exceptional like-for-like growth in this period. John said it earlier on today, this business seems to have come of age. We're making a double-digit operating profit out of our stores in Spain, and the sales densities in stores which we only started opening 3 years ago are now in line with those in the UK. It's too early to say much more about the stores which we've opened in the Netherlands, in Northern Europe, in the Netherlands, Belgium and Germany, other than that the early signs are encouraging. But, as I say, a total of 4 stores doesn't really allow us to say much more. Trading in Ireland for all retailers has been difficult. It's been difficult for us too. And finally, on Primark trading performance, this margin has been perhaps more resilient than we'd expected. We were buying our goods at sort of 135, 140 to the dollar. What we're selling now was purchased at more like 160. And that's made quite a difference. And then these higher volumes do flow through, higher sales levels do flow through to the bottom line quite quickly. There is some inflation on the horizon. Freight costs have already gone up, and we're seeing pressure on cotton costs, on artificial fabric costs, and on labour rates in China. Continuing my crowing about Primark then, this store in Bristol, which is a really wonderful store, was awarded the Store Designer of the Year. If you want an insight into why Primark as a discounter is really very different from any other discounter in the clothing sector that's gone before, go see Bristol. And quite rightly, and perhaps later than they should have, Retail Week also named us as their Retailer of the Year. Here's the second picture of Arthur Ryan. In 40 years of business, picking up his award, and never was one more deserved for lifetime achievement in retail. Just one other anecdote to share about Arthur. He's one of the people who's been out of place. He's been out in Spain and is unable to find a flight back because there aren't any. He's actually on a container ship, making his way from Spain back to Ireland so that he can get back into the business. Right. Having gone through the businesses, let me just conclude with a few words about the major capital projects which so characterise the activity of ABF right now. This is the list which is now complete and are delivering profits in this period. Sugar, Zambia, Mozambique factory, the UK grocery sugar packing ingredients, and then retail. And then here's the list of projects which we can see in the sort of which are coming towards us and which we expect will contribute further returns once they are complete. The Vogo should be complete, the biofuels facility should be complete by the end of this calendar year, but the ramp up of production will probably take 6 months to fully be completed. Swaziland, the capacity expansion is still a year away. All the new stores across Europe, that's a continuing process, as you know. The Castlemaine factory should be commissioned by, again, the end of 2010 calendar. The Twinings manufacturing reconfiguration, which is a huge exercise, will take us until the end of 2011-2012. And then finally, this major yeast extracts factory and also extra capacity for the yeast business in China, that should be commissioning by about June this year. So, in summary, these results are excellent. They come about from the investments that we've made delivering returns. They come about from all the hard work that people across the group have been undertaking in restructuring, particularly in the grocery businesses, but not just there. And they come about also because there is an element of recovery from weaker positions of previous years. The cash flows of the group are very strong. The financial position is very strong. After all that investment, to still have the same debt level, I think, is proof of that. And I just wanted to emphasize the central point. This level of high investment will continue. We have many businesses that have lots of potential for growth, and we're going to keep investing in them while they have that potential. Thank you very much indeed.
Shall we start with Polly? Polly Barclay.
Thanks. It's Polly Barclay from JP Morgan Cazenove. Can we just talk a bit more about Primark, both in terms of current trading and also expectations for the margin for the full year, given what you're saying about freight costs?
Shall I try and just have a go? Yes, I think really the margin resilient point on the slide really is forward-looking as well. We are highlighting the fact that freight costs are really somewhat up. I mean, it's factor of three or four. But we are getting this operational gearing, which is more than I think we would have expected from the higher volumes, Polly. So I would say that I think the margin outlook for the full year is probably pretty flat on last year.
And is that because the like-for-likes continue to be at around the sort of 8% level?
Well, I mean, we don't, let's put it this way. As you know, we don't sort of give you the like-for-likes going into the second half, but let's say we've got a good momentum going forward. Martin de Boer, yeah.
Hi, Martin de Boer, Investec. A question on Primark to follow up on that one, and then on China sugars. George, you mentioned Primark margins in Iberia, so double digit, but my sense of that business is it's currently run sort of as a marginal business being supplied out of Ireland. What would you think is a sustainable margin in that business when it's running at scale with its own distribution infrastructure? Is it going to be north or south of the sort of margins that you're seeing in the UK?
I think the margin it's making now is sustainable. The investment in the infrastructure will reduce costs, not increase it, because it replaces all that trucking cost that we're currently wearing coming out of Ireland. In terms of other elements of infrastructure, there isn't much else to put in. Okay. So I think that if it's a marginal business in terms of being not requiring too much, not having too much added costs
in it in the past. I don't think there's much more to come.
Okay, that's very interesting. Thank you. China sugar, where are you? I mean, looking ahead to this autumn, what sort of yields are you going to be expecting in the north, beet yields? And I suppose the question in my mind is to what extent does sort of winning in China depend on persuading the government to change the subsidy regime and therefore make beet more attractive to the farmer? Or to what extent do you think you can do it alone by, you know, educating the farmer to get the yield up?
Yes.
Will the yields alone do it, or do you need a change in the subsidy regime?
I think that the Chinese government has moved a long way in the last year in recognizing that they need more sugar to come out of the north, and the level of, I mentioned this level of local government support, it follows on from a more general support for sugar production in the area. The tonnage that we processed this year in the north was well down on last year. That was a consequence of two things. Firstly, it was our own scaling back to areas where we thought we'd made more progress than others. And secondly, it was the consequence of subsidies for competing crops and high prices for competing crops too. We think that, in terms of the latter, the balance going into next year is much better, and it's for sugar that we're planting now, than it was a year ago. And as a consequence of that and the training, we expect probably close on a trebling of the beet production in the north for next year over this. Now, it's early days because it's not in the ground yet, but the indications we're getting are that the acreage will be expanded substantially, and if we can get yields to up just a little bit, we'll be processing a lot more sugar next September, October than we were this year.
Thanks for that. Thanks.
Good. Warren Ackerman.
Yes. Morning, it's Warren Ackerman at Evolution. A question on CapEx. Is the expectation of around £600 million of CapEx for the full year still about right? And the question specifically is, I thought CapEx was peaking in 2010 and coming down slightly in 2011. From what you've said, that may not perhaps be the case. So I was wondering whether you might give us some early indication of what you think 2011 CapEx might be. That's the first question. And then secondly, going back to Spanish sugar, what kind of benefit do you expect to see in the second half from Azucarera? I think you said there was hardly any contribution in the first half as you work through the higher cost inventory, and I guess you get some synergies coming through as well.
I'll have a go at that. Yes, sort of CapEx at the 600 mark or just above, I think is probably pretty well where people have got that for the year, and that remains the case. I think we've always said that next year would not see a big reduction from that level, and I think probably factoring in a figure of about that size into next year I think is appropriate. It's actually one of the reasons that I think we've really emphasised today the cash generative ability of the group and the fact that that's expanding. Because certainly, you know, we've got the ability to be able to fund this. And I think that's certainly the way that we see that going forward. And as George has said, I mean, I think there are a lot of opportunities that we can see for CapEx, you know, particularly in the area of Primark. So I think moving away from it being a sort of a bubble, if you like, that we're going to come off, but, a continued higher level of CapEx than you may have thought, I think should be the way you should look forward. You talked about Azucarera and, you know, where is that going to be in the second half. I think most of the contribution for the year will come in the second half, clearly. So a number, well into the 20s or so of millions coming through from that in the second half. Shall we pick? Yeah.
Hi, it's Sarah Welford from Citi. Just in terms of Primark, I know it's early days for your stores that are in Germany and in Portugal, etc. But can you perhaps give us a sense of what is the trading like compared to what you saw, say, in some of the Spanish stores that you opened 2 or 3 years ago?
Thanks. Yeah, it's one general point and one specific example. They've started quicker than the Spanish stores, so sales densities have been very good. How good? Well, Netherlands has got the second highest sales densities after Oxford Street.
Shall we come towards the front? Julian Hardwick here.
Julian Hardwick at RBS. Can I ask a quick question about dividend? I almost fell off my chair when I heard John say that you were rebuilding dividend cover, given that you're starting from about the lowest payout ratio in the space. So I wondered, could you just tell us what cover are you actually aiming to get to? I mean, I think if you annualise the increase that you've done at the interim stage on the dividend, we're looking at about a one-third payout ratio. I mean, is that your idea of an ideal payout ratio? And I think you also alluded to opportunities for investment. I mean, are you trying to suggest to us that there is something bigger that you might spend your money on beyond the capex that you're spending, or are you just saying you're rather mean?
I think in terms of cash, ABF likes to be conservative. I think that the payout ratio, we've moved it a bit back in line with where it was probably 6-7 years ago, because there was a little bit of erosion. So it's a little bit of a nudge, not a sort of a major move from there. And that would be the sort of broadly the level that we're happy with. I don't want to give a target, because everybody sort of looks at a particular sort of payout ratio and looks for that. I'm not trying to suggest that there's something big coming along. I think we're saying that as we look at the group and the way it's constituted at the moment, we're getting a lot of capital opportunities coming through. It's great to have our own financial firepower and wherewithal to be able to do that. And that's what we've done. I mean, look, we've gone through a recession over the last couple of years, and we've carried on a capital investment program without stopping during that time. And I think that's been a testament to the fact that we've had that financial firepower, and that's something that we want to retain. Yeah, Anne Critchlow.
Hi, it's Anne Critchlow from SG. Does the presence of the Spanish warehouse now mean that you might accelerate openings in Spain to leverage that investment? And how does the pipeline look outside the UK in general for next year, please, on store openings for Primark?
I think we probably would accelerate the store opening program in Spain if we could find more of the right sort of stores. One of the things that's characterized Primark really since the very earliest days has been a tremendous discipline about not opening the wrong space. A consequence of that is there are very few underperforming stores across the group. And that discipline remains. But for instance, in Spain, at the moment we have no high street stores at all. We're all in shopping centres in the outskirts of major cities. If we could get stores in high streets, we'd have them tomorrow. But it's simply a question of availability of that sort of space, and also other shopping centre space where we'd like to be. So we've got our target list, but until we can get ideal or close to ideal locations, we'll go at the pace that we go at. The pipeline is getting better, having said that, outside the UK, and obviously in the UK it's strong with that BHS parcel of stores.
That's great. Alan Erskine.
Thank you. Alan Erskine from UBS. I wonder if you could just give us a little bit more granularity on the movement in the sugar profits. So they're up about 15 million. I guess Illovo was down a couple of million. Was that 15-20 million increase then split equally between China and the EU? Just a little bit of flavour for the moving parts in that sugar business.
Yes, I mean Illovo was down a little bit more than that included within the numbers. But yes, I mean the increment both in China and in the EU were broadly the same in terms of the improvement. Jeremy Fialco.
Morning, Jeremy Fialco at Redburn Partners here. On the whole sort of CapEx side, it's clear that you've spent a lot recently and you're going to continue to spend a lot of money. Can you talk a little bit about the approval process for your major CapEx projects and the sort of checks and balances that you have? Because I think we all know companies in the sector that have spent a lot of money on CapEx and haven't got the returns to come through in a fairly spectacular way. So what sort of assurances can you give that this money is being very, very sort of carefully spent? And can you just talk about that a little bit more, please?
Okay, I think two points I'd make, and John will add his own. The first one is that CapEx is quite tightly reviewed at the centre. So we review down to quite small projects at the centre. It's not as if we give operating businesses a lot of freedom or a sort of block sum of money. We see just about everything of any scale at all at the centre, and we challenge it, we knock it around before we approve it or not. So we have a discipline at the centre which is perhaps tighter than it might be in some other places. And secondly, we asked, because inevitably at the centre, once a project has reached us, the financial hurdles that we demand have been achieved, we review for more than simply the financial parts of the project. We ask questions around capability in particular. Do we think that there's a team here who can deliver on that? What are the risks to it? What's the track record of the people building the thing? What else have they got on? It's not as if we don't get some of these things wrong. But at least when we do get them wrong, we've usually understood where the error has come. John, do you want to...
No, I think that's right. And I think the other thing is that it really is opportunity-driven. Sometimes you may get the impression that it's like an allocation of money across the various businesses, where it really is about demand pull. I mean, it's the businesses seeing those opportunities and coming forward with the capital projects. And then they only get approval if they're above our hurdle rate, and they have to go through that approval process. So that hopefully gives you a bit of a feel about how it goes. Yeah, Bob Altshuler.
Morning, Bob Altshuler here, Bank of America Merrill's. Two questions, if I may. One, given grocery was a strong contributor to the first half, how can we think about the evolution for grocery profitability in second half, particularly year on year? Restructuring benefits, are they coming through earlier or on track as we expected? And then two, in terms of the weighting of profit delivery through the course of the year, very strong deliverance in first half. Do we expect a similar weighting first half, second half, or are we going to get lesser or more in second half in terms of how the deliverance is coming through, according to your expectations? Thanks.
If I can answer part of that and John answer the rest. I think in a number of these restructuring type of projects, we've had a step change in the profitability of those businesses as the benefits of that restructuring has come through. We hope in the process of restructuring we've built a platform from which we can then grow. So World Foods, Jordan's, Rye Vita, I think are both demonstrating that we can put incremental growth on top of the restructuring benefit. Twinings obviously went through its restructuring when we merged it with Ovaltine now about 6 years ago, and we every year since we've seen good organic growth from that business. We then have other businesses, the bakery businesses in particular, where there is little market growth and there's not an international opportunity, where I think they'll be characterized, I hope in the future, as solid cash generators. In the United States, we're in categories which aren't growing particularly strongly, but with the focus that creating an FMCG business which isn't distracted the whole time by food service or commodity oils should give us benefit there too. But undoubtedly there's a step change that's occurred in a number of these businesses in this first half. John, and as the specifics on second half, and then you...
Yeah, specifics on second half. Look, I mean, the thing I would say about the group is to point you to the chairman's outlook statement, where I hopefully we give the best feel there, where we say, encouraged by the success to date and the strong momentum of the business into the second half. So we're really saying that, you know, the sort of momentum that we've seen in the first half, we're certainly seeing that as we're going into the second half. And specifically around, you know, how should you look at grocery for the full year? Yeah, I think the improvement that you're looking at in the first half, you know, you should be reflecting. I'm not talking about the same percentage change, but, you know, you should see some big improvements coming through in grocery for the remainder of the year. So I suspect that, you know, for a lot of people in terms of their forecasts, I think you probably need to raise your forecasts for grocery. Yeah, just Robert, I think.
Robin Asquith, JP Morgan Asset Management. A question on the CapEx. We talk about the opportunities. Is that because there's better growth out there, or because you can make better returns due to structural change in an industry? And if you can feed that into some of the comments you made this morning about the global outlook, you made some positive comments about the global economy, China, US, UK. Just sort of talk through that would be quite useful.
Okay. I think... the investment opportunities, there are a number of sources of them. Clearly Primark is a huge investment opportunity, as I think over a long period of time both African and Chinese sugar will be big investment opportunities. Some of the investments then that's currently underway is, again, opportunistic is wrong, but our position in certain markets gives us a right to play. So, for example, the bioethanol plant, I think we're the natural builders of that in the UK because of our strength in the agricultural sector. There have then been a bunch of projects around capacity, particularly in ingredients. Yeast is a globally growing sector. Anything in China is likely to have growth in it. The both enzymes, use of both enzymes and yeast extracts in the food chain are growth areas. And then there are always cost opportunities. ABF has always chased cost reduction hard. So, for example, the twining supply chain, the work in Silver Spoon, work in bakeries just is ongoing. These are all just about cost release. I think what is different about ABF now probably is the opportunity within Primark and also in sugar, both in Africa and in China.
And you can make structurally higher returns than you could in the past in sugar, for example. Is there a step change in the returns you can make for additional capex going in?
I don't know. I mean, I think that there's certainly returns to be made above our shareholders' cost of capital. So whether it's dilutive of the historic number or accretive, I think probably matters less from my perspective.
Mr. Lakin.
Julian Lakin, Mirabeau Securities. Good morning.
Good morning.
Could you just talk a little bit about Germany and Primark? And obviously, Germany's can be a graveyard for retailers, yes. And obviously you've got your foot in the door. And how you sort of characterise that market versus your experiences in Spain, perhaps?
I think it's difficult. I think it's premature to say too much. We've got two stores in this enormous market, and they're both trading well. It's, you know, yes, it's been the graveyard of many others, but just being hubristic for a moment, when we went into Spain, a lot of people said, what on earth are you doing taking Inditex on in their backyard? And it appears that we're more willing to be bullish about Spain now than any time in the past. But two stores is a toe in the water. And we'll add a couple more if the first two continue to go well, just as we did in Spain. We didn't have any particular ambitions other than to see whether we could trade in Spain when we first went in. We didn't put it in a depot to begin with. And as we traded two stores well in Spain, we just added a few more. And I think our approach to Germany will be similar. If in 6 months' time we've been chased out of Germany, then we all said, well, it was worth trying.
Okay. Thank you very much, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you.